Hawkins and Spiegel Show.
Proximity to me over fame and fortune is definitely what most financial advisors would recommend.
Afternoons on the Score.
Expanding playoffs to 10 teams and then 2 or 3 are still delusional and think that they can make it to 10. I think that kind of makes it very interesting trade deadline. But, you know, Billy and I, we spend more time talking about how we can improve this group and focus now on this group that we have that actually is playing well and had a first, you know, month winning, you know, in February. And, you know, last couple of games, they had some slipping. But I think overall this group is doing so much better and looking forward to see next 40 games.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on the Score.
That's the new president of the Bulls, Arturas Karnišovas.
Flip me over there.
Oh, man.
Thank you for hanging out, Parkins and Spiegel, on the Score. And if you're seeing on social media, like, oh, Ryan Pace is going to be talking soon. Why aren't you guys airing it? It's a Zoom press conference, so we can't air it without the audio quality being awful and hearing all the breaks and calling on people and just like a ton of awkwardness there. So we have Herb Lawrence and others listening and cutting up the press conference as it happens. And so then when Ryan Pace is done speaking, we'll be able to bring you exactly what you need to know from the Bears GM as soon as he's done. And then Matt Nagy will talk and we will do the same thing. So we will have the pertinent details so you don't have to listen to Ryan Pace talk about collaboration and a bunch of nothingness. We'll take care of all the fat and then we'll bring you the meat as soon as he's done speaking. So yes. If you're tuning in, where's Ryan Pace? That's where Ryan Pace is. We're not wasting our time with the nonsense of the Zoom calls. So Arturas speaks yesterday, and I think even just from that clip that we played coming back, and we'll play a little bit more here in a minute, I still am taken back, Spiegs, and taken aback by the refreshing appearance of candor, directness, and different. Like, I haven't heard Arturas Karnišovas enough to be jaded or bored or cynical by him. Like, it's awesome to just hear him and be like, oh, what team does he run? The Bulls? Word? Like, it still is fresh and exciting to hear that dude talk about my basketball team.
That's completely understandable. And it's both of them. You know, oftentimes the basketball boss and the coach will be of kindred spirits, or the football boss and the football coach. I don't get tired of hearing Billy Donovan talk about this team.
He's doing a good job too.
Right, because they're very interesting. They're legitimately interesting. It's an interesting moment in the life cycle. And you get guys who are actually watching stuff and don't mind telling you stuff. They don't mind talking about stuff. And yes, Arturas is absolutely still new enough for us. And he has not spoken very much. And we haven't heard somebody talk about overarching basketball philosophy, team building, skill sets of players, what they like to do, the way that they intelligently think about players and try to communicate about them and to them directly in an elevated and classy way. We haven't heard this in a long, long, long time, man. So it is completely understandable to still be caught off guard when we get a chance to really listen to him. And then because of that, Danny, to take like things that might be, well, he's just saying that publicly. Who knows what he thinks privately? You know what? I really do get the feeling he's saying publicly how he feels about things privately and how he talks about things more often privately than not.
Well, he comes across as direct. There's no question about it. He doesn't come across as a double talker, but I don't know. Like, I've never met the man, right? Hired during a pandemic. Never had him on the show. I have no relationship with him. I have no ability to tell you one way or the other than what any fan would have from listening to these few press conferences and media availabilities and the interviews that he's done. So, like, me and the listener are in the same place on this one. I wish that I've heard from people who do know him, and I've tried to gather some intel on it. But in terms of my own direct one-on-one experience with him, I have none. And I'll say this. Like, let's play this clip, and then I want you to maybe assuage me of a fear that I'm having here, because I find myself going to this place whenever the Bulls lose games, and when they play good teams, they've been losing games. Like, the Bulls are not good. They are just better than awful, and they are run competently, and just clearing that bar has been so refreshing that I keep having this, like, nagging feeling whenever I see them actually go up against the Suns, the Nuggets. They've got a lot of games left against the Bucks and the Nets and the Sixers and, like, the good teams in this league. So here's Arturis Karnišević talking about, you just heard him say, don't think there's going to be a lot of sellers because the playoffs have been expanded to 10 teams and so many people think that they can make it. So it's going to be a weird trade deadline. Here's how we talked specifically about viewing his players heading into a deadline.
I mean, I never look, you know, at players as trade commodities. I mean, you know, right now we, you know, like I said, you know, focus on winning games because that's, you know, the separation between fourth and 10th place is a game and a half. So this group is doing pretty well. And hopefully, like I said, you know, we can get Lowry back and OP and see what we can do with this team. And had a pretty good month in February with the winning record. So we'll see what we can do. And, you know, when trade deadline comes, you know, like I said, you know, I think now 12 or 13 teams are in the East. So I just think the team's going to try to improve. And like you said, you know, there's not going to be a lot of sellers. So I think we're just going to focus on our guys and how to get them better.
So that's the president of the Bulls, and he is exactly right. The Knicks would be the 4 seed in the East if the playoffs started today. They have 17 losses. The Bulls would be the 10th seed in the East if the playoffs started today, and they have 18 losses. So one game separates 4 and 10 in the loss column. Now, it's a players' league. We've talked about that a lot. It was my biggest complaint of the Garpax regime was that they did not do enough to court and coddle to, frankly, the superstar athlete in the NBA. I like Artur. He's saying the right thing. These are players. These are human beings. I don't look at them as trade commodities. But with your guy, Thad Young, and every Bulls fan is a fan of his, he's been amazing this year. He's been their second best player this year behind Zach LaVine. I can't escape the thought of, man, he's 13 years older than Patrick Williams. He's 32 years old. He does not align with the next Bulls team that's ready to win. And if he's the second best player on the team, you could get a real asset for that will align with the team that is actually ready to win. I need Arturis Karnišević to be dispassionate. Say one thing publicly and then do the other thing. Like, if you can get a first-round pick for Thad Young or an asset that aligns with your actual core, man, that is his job as president of the Bulls. And whenever I see the Bulls play the teams that they'd actually need to play in the playoffs, there's that stark, harsh reality of a reminder that, oh, yeah, it's Zach LaVine and a lot of unproven young dudes and Thaddeus Young that's making up this roster right now.
Yeah, I understand the thought process because that's been incredibly obvious in the last two games against Phoenix and then against Denver as you've watched them come up against good teams with multiple options. I mean, last night, Denver has three different guys that could score 25 or 30 on you if they needed to. I mean, Michael Porter Jr. is not getting those kind of opportunities, but that guy will be a 25-point-per-game guy in this league at some point if given the opportunity. Jamal Murray is a true number one perimeter guy. He showed it in the bubble last year. He's been their leading scorer many, many different times this year, scored into the 40s. And then you saw Nikola Jokic, who we talked about a little bit yesterday. That dude is just brilliant. He's an absolute superstar. He's a point center. He runs that team. He's as close to Arvydas Sabonis as we're going to get in this NBA right now. And that's a different animal than the Bulls. It's a completely different animal than the Bulls, who have, as you say, Zach LaVine and then Thaddeus Young coming in there to try and do defensive things on Jokic and try and stop him. Try to go at Jokic offensively. And then, you know, they're hoping and praying for a hot night from Luke Kornet. Yeah, they're very far away from being a top six team in the NBA, a top eight team in the NBA who they've run up against. And yeah, that's his job, is to figure out how to get there. The thing is, how much does he value winning and learning to be a winning player in this atmosphere? And are the guys that do matter learning about winning and being a winning player from Thaddeus Young to an extent that makes him more valuable here than the asset you might get? And it depends on the value that he's hearing coming back. But the way that Arturas talked about Zach LaVine yesterday, he talked about Zach LaVine as a guy who was playing winning basketball, right? He talked about the development of Zach LaVine. And that doesn't happen with just Billy Donovan and just time and just Zach LaVine's trainer. I think it happens in large part because of his very good friend, the only guy that's on his All-Star Game Zoom, the guy that he looks to, the guy that they promised him that they were going to get there. I don't think Zach is this without Thaddeus Young. And if Zach is developing into a guy you're going to keep, and Thaddeus is a big part of that happening, there's value there that might exceed whatever you can get back for Thaddeus Young.
So in a vacuum, I agree with that. But if I'm going to take those two clips that we played from Arturas Karnišević and say that, or agree with what he's saying, which is there's not going to be a lot of sellers. Okay. Well, then what does that mean if you are one of the sellers? This is simple economic principle. You'll be able to get more for your asset, right? Supply and demand.
Yeah.
If, like right now, if you're trying to buy a house, I can speak to this as someone who just bought a house. Houses are going for over asking price, and they're going before they even make it to the public listing because there's so much demand for people trying to buy houses, get more space, get out of the city, taxes, COVID, all of these reasons that it is a tremendous seller's market right now for a house. It would be the exact same thing in the NBA if 20-something teams are looking to stand pat or buy. It would behoove you to then be a seller. And Thaddeus Young, if he could get you a real asset, and I'm not saying sell him off for a 2024 second-round pick. I'm not valuing what you're talking about. Uh-huh. But if you can get a real thing for him that can be packaged to move up in the lottery, that can be an unprotected first-round pick in a year, that can help you recruit a free agent in 2022, like whatever it is, if that thing can be acquired for Thaddeus Young, I think they need to do it. Let me read this tweet to you. Do you follow MK Hoops on Twitter? Mark, his last name is K. I'm not sure what his last name is. He's an awesome Bulls follow. And he sent this tweet out yesterday. And I don't know. He's making a point in an extreme way. But I was thinking about it. He might not be that far off. He tweeted, "The difference between the Bulls being where they are now and having the worst record in the league is Thad Young." Read into that however you want, but he's that good and important. And so I'd ask you, like, let's say just for a minute that premise is true, that they actually would be the Minnesota Timberwolves if they did not have Thad Young. Would you rather them be in contention for a top three pick? Or would you rather them be in contention for the 7, 8, 9, 10 seed in a watered-down Eastern Conference with Thad Young? Because I think the cleaner path to an actual championship and contending team would be to add Cade Cunningham to this roster, right, with the first overall pick in the draft.
That is a sensibly dispassionate take on how you get better in the NBA. I get it. And look, I'm the one who's been screaming for tank wins in the past few years under Garpax with
yes.
Boylan and at the end of Fred with Hoiberg. But you know what? The difference is I didn't believe a lick in any of the people in charge for that entire time.
Yeah, you didn't believe in their player development.
Yep, no, not a lick. I believe that they fully needed some magical hoops messiah to show up and let them define the franchise. I was ready to hand the keys to the whole franchise to Dwayne Wade or anybody with some gravitas who could get them more respected and that kind of thing. And I also didn't believe in anybody on the roster, really. You know, I didn't believe in anybody on the roster. Like, I fully didn't believe in Zach LaVine. I believe in a different way that Zach LaVine can be a part of a very, very good team in the NBA now. I believe that differently even than just a few weeks ago, frankly. Things have changed because I see what good coaching can do and good franchise management can do. So, look, am I being swayed away from the obvious, which is that you need the tanking and you need those assets? Maybe. And this is the danger of falling for what could potentially be mediocrity. I understand, but I just I trust these guys, though.
I
trust
them.
And that's the thing.
I do,
too. So if Arturas ends up with the 9th pick or the 12th pick, as opposed to...
Yeah, if they make the playoffs, it's more likely to be like the 15th or 16th pick.
Okay. Well, guess what? I'd probably feel better about that than Garpax with the 7 pick because they blew it on Wendell Carter Jr. Oh, man.
I don't agree with that.
I think they sucked. They had no scouting department whatsoever, the thinnest scouting department in the entire NBA, and they were taking guys based on if they had ever played for either Murray State or Iowa State. That was their thing. And so I trust Arturas. At this point, I trust Arturas. And if he looks at it and says, I don't have to go that route, I'd rather go this route where I build winners and build culture and make my margin for stars a little bit more difficult, but I'll also draw a free agent when they see the nice nest that I'm building. I'm going to go ahead and trust that if that's the way that they feel.
And that is reasonable. And I trust them too. But what I'm saying is with my eyes, I'm watching these games. It's not just the Suns or the Nuggets. Look, they've got what? One win all year against the playoff team? Two wins all year? Right? Play the Clippers, lose. Play the Sixers, lose. Like this is a young team that is fun to watch, that is well coached, that is being carried by an all-time efficient offensive season by Zach LaVine.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Williams is legit. Like there are plenty of things to celebrate about the new Bulls regime without forgetting that, hey man, they are many top-end assets away from being a legitimate competitor. And if it's true that there are not going to be very many sellers, and if it's true that his phone is ringing off the hook for Thad Young will not be a Bull the next time the Bulls are ready to win multiple playoff series. He just won't.
Blech.
I'm telling you.
I know.
I'm telling you. Like
But
like Thad Young too.
What if they make a playoff series this year, Danny, and you get to learn whether Zach LaVine can show up and be that guy that carries you to a couple of wins in a playoff series or even a series win? You get to learn that this year as you're making a max contract decision about Zach in the offseason and next year. That has value.
It does have value. I think specifically, I think that Zach's play has made that decision already. Like, I think Zach LaVine is getting a max contract, and he will hit free agency if the Bulls do not offer it to him. Like, you know, I believe that he's playing like Bradley Beal. He's playing like Damian Lillard. He's playing like Steph Curry. Like he's playing like those guys that if the Bulls acquired them and then you looked at their numbers, you'd be like, oh my God, we got one of the best offensive players in the league. So I don't whether they get the 7 seed or the 11 seed, like I think Zach LaVine has answered that question. Now some of the younger dudes and the playoff experience, like it all matters. And so again, I trust them, but And this is, again, there's a huge variable here of I don't know what they're being offered for Thad Young or will be offered for Thad Young.
Right.
So I don't know. There's no way that anybody can know. We're going to talk to John Hollinger about it coming up in about
an
hour.
Maybe he'll know, yeah.
Exactly. Maybe he'll know. In this trade market, what is Thad Young worth to a contender? And if he says unprotected future first-round pick, yeah, man. Sorry. I do think he has to go. And it'll suck, and it'll make this year a little bit less watchable and a little bit less likely for them to make the playoffs, but not impossible, right? Otto Porter comes back. Lowry comes back. It's not impossible that a team without Thad Young, like the Bulls, could still be the 9 seed in the Eastern Conference and make its way into the play-in game. Like, that's not an impossibility with how bad the East is. So I just I think that we have to use his words and hold him to that. Like, okay, fine, you don't want to make these guys trade assets. Your job is to win a championship with the Bulls. And Thad Young being traded might be your best path to getting there.
Let me tell you something that they are woefully thin on, and it was incredibly obvious last night, is true, legitimate physical beef in the middle. Because Nikola Jokic, he runs that team as a point center, and he could call any play, make anything happen for anyone. And he made a little bit happen for Jamal Murray in that fourth quarter, but he just kept calling his own number. And even Murray said after the game, yeah, we just kept calling the same play because they couldn't stop it. Jokic, 39-14 and 9 assists for that dude. He's a brilliant player. He usually doesn't score that much because he doesn't need to, but he can when he recognized they had nothing to stop him. Thad Young ended up being the best option defensively. Wendell Carter's a nice player, a good dude, a hard worker, but he cannot body up to a legit center. And Jokic is so brilliant. You don't think of him as a true post-up move back to the basket center, but he can be that guy. He can be, and that's what makes his other skills so special. So, man, it's one of my favorite players in the NBA, and you saw it. You saw why. And the Bulls have absolutely no match for a true big, and they need to find one eventually.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, Joel Embiid and Nikola Jokic are going to be top three finishers in NBA MVP this year, so nobody has answers for them. But yes, Wendell Carter Jr. and the Bulls specifically and hilariously at times did not have an answer. He was able to do anything and everything he wanted. We can get some of your feedback on the conundrum that faces Arturis Karnišević. We have John Hollinger to talk about it in just over an hour. Ryan Pace is speaking. We can give you some of the headlines from Twitter, and you'll hear clips from him coming up soon. It's Parkinson Spiegel on The Score.
And I think as I reflect back, what I'm, and you're going to hear this word a lot today because it's true, collaboration.
Collaboration will result in the right decisions for the Bears. As I said, the leadership, the collaboration, again, the collaboration.
There's conviction and there's collaboration. So when you look at the whole product and the collaboration.
Hey guys, sticking with collaboration.
I've told you about the collaboration.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons on The Score.
We are going to have the 28 minutes or so that Ryan Pace spoke down to just the meat of about 8 minutes that you need to hear with all the Zoom stuff taken care of and all of that in just a matter of moments. It's Parkinson Spiegel on The Score. But apparently, Spiegs, Ryan Pace spoke more of collaboration today, but did acknowledge that they use the word too much. So progress, baby steps.
Really?
Maybe. Yeah.
Acknowledging that they used the word too much, that's interesting. Was it in the question, or does that mean he notices the coverage, which would be human and understandable, though something that those guys wouldn't cop to for the most part?
Way to go, Ryan Pace.
I'm guessing it was in the question. Like, hey, you know, you guys say this a lot, but we'll find out together momentarily. Based on my Twitter account, I don't want to pretend like some of you guys don't already know what was said. We'll get more of the details here from Pace in just a second. Some of the headlines will be that Allen Robinson sounds like he's going to be a Bear one way or the other. You know, they said, oh, we got it here. Okay, beautiful. So listen here on Allen Robinson, Mitch Trubisky, return of Eddie Goldman, lots of stuff from Ryan Pace consolidated down just to the meat and potatoes from the Bears Oh, and we'll and it'll start with the Mitch Trubisky future with or without the Bears.
Yeah, you know, again, that's going to be part of our offseason plan, and we're not going to lay all that out right now, Pat. You know, it's just those are all internal discussions we've had, but you know, I would say again, everything's on the table with all
hey,
the
Ryan, two questions. Has Eddie Goldman given you any indication or confirmation that he will play in 2021? And also, considering the tight salary cap situation that you're in, what is your confidence level in, as honestly as you can be, that both Kyle Fuller and Akeem Hicks will be on the roster in 2021?
Good question, Mark. With Eddie, we've communicated with Eddie on a regular basis. We did that during the season as well. And obviously, we really missed him this year. Excited to get him back in the mix. Coach Rumpf, our new defensive line coach, has communicated with him as well. So that's all been part of it. And, you know, obviously, he's a big piece what we're doing, so we're excited about that. What was your second question, Mark?
Considering the salary cap situation, what's your most honest assessment of your confidence level that both Fuller and Hicks will be on the roster next year?
Yeah, without getting into specific players, I think, you know, this is going to be a year, Mark. You guys know it's going to be about adjusting, and we're not the only team in the league dealing with these circumstances, and everyone's prepping for a tighter cap. We have a plan in place with that. It involves different things. I mean, there's different ways for us to create room with our cap. Not just releasing players. That's a hard part of the business. We had a difficult decision with Buster yesterday, and there'll be some decisions to make. I think you're going to see more of that around the league than you've ever seen. But we're prepared. We're expecting a cap to be about 180, so we're prepared for that, and we'll operate accordingly.
Kevin Fishbane.
Hey, Ryan. With Allen Robinson, I know in January you mentioned the franchise tag is an option. He's been pretty open about the way he feels about that tag. How, if anything, does that impact your decision, knowing the way he feels about it?
Yeah, I think we got to look at it. Obviously, we have a ton of respect for Allen. And then, you know, we have to do what's best for the Bears, too. And so, you know, we consider everything. The league gives us the franchise tag as an option. You know, that tool's there for a reason. We haven't made a firm decision on any of that yet. But we know we have that at our disposal.
Jason Leisure.
Ryan, are you committed to bringing Allen back for 2021, regardless of what it takes, whether it's a new contract or franchise tag? Are you counting on him? Can you ensure that he's going to be on the Bears in 2021?
We love Allen Robinson. He's a great player for us, Jason. We know that. And not just the player, but the teammate, the professional that he is. Again, the franchise tag is an option for us. It doesn't mean we're necessarily going to use that. But we want to keep our good players, and Allen is a good player for us.
Hub Arkush.
Hey, Ryan, I hope you're well, man. If you had a franchise quarterback, a Russell Wilson or a Deshaun Watson, what might cause you to think it would be a good idea or make sense to trade them?
To trade who?
If you had a franchise quarterback in a Deshaun Watson or a Russell Wilson, what might make you think that it would be a good idea or cause you to go ahead and trade one of them?
Yeah, that's a good question, Hub. I think there's so many things that go on internal with teams around the league, and you never really know unless you're within those walls. And you know, I've only been with two different clubs, but there's things that have gone on behind the walls that no one else will know. And so you never really know what's going on. You just respect the process, but you never really know the reasons behind those things. So I really can't answer that in any detail.
Do you think, is it a question with each different franchise of policy of how much they're going to let players dictate and how much they have to follow their own rules that could cause them to deal somebody they don't want to deal?
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think it's just every team's constructing their roster differently. And I think every GM, you have to be forward thinking. You have to think ahead in the future. And I think there's a lot of decisions that can affect that. And they might not be popular decisions or decisions that everyone understands right now. But I think there's things that go on behind the scenes that nobody knows.
Adam Johns.
Hey, Ryan, kind of going off that, when you look at that trade market, especially for quarterbacks and what it could be, is there like a timeline, a deadline that you kind of stick to as you wait for maybe other situations to play out, whether that's with other cities, other teams, in terms of making your own decision? And then kind of going off that, like, is there a limit for trying to acquire for one of those guys? Like, is there such a thing as too much in trying to make a deal like that?
Yeah, I think with any trade, we're always going to have, you know, we can't be reckless. We're always going to have our limits with every trade. And that's going to be, you know, individual based on the position and the player you're talking about, of course. And then I think the timeline, it just dictates, you know, you obviously have a lot of different things planned out with free agency and the draft. And the last thing you want to do is put yourself or the team in a bad position where you get kind of stuck, you know? So I think you have internal timelines that you know based on the calendar year with free agency and the draft, and you operate from that.
Adam Hoag.
Hey, Ryan, back to Allen Robinson real quick. By all accounts, he's been the perfect player for you and your culture on and off the field, what he's delivered in the locker room. Typically, you've rewarded those types of players with contract extensions. This case obviously went a little bit longer than you guys expected. Are you concerned at all how others on the team, on your roster, might view the situation if it continues to drag on into the spring and the summer?
Yeah, you know, Adam, we have a history, you know, of extending our players, as you mentioned, and, you know, we usually find a way to make that work. I think the proof's kind of in the pudding with that, and every one of them's different, you know, and every one of them's personal, and that's why I'm sensitive, and I hope you guys understand about talking about that in the media, but it's, you know, it's a process, and, you know, it takes both sides to work through that, and every one of them's unique, and I do like to lean on our history. I think Joey Lane does a great job of working through that and building relationships with those agents. And, you know, Allen has a really good agent that we've worked with in the past, and it's a process though. And we're kind of going through that.
Brad Biggs.
Ryan, Matt suggested back during Super Bowl week to NFL.com that the Bears were a quarterback away from being a contender. How are you approaching the off season to reflect that opinion? And then I'd also like to know if Khalil Mack or Jalen Johnson underwent surgery.
Yeah, first on the quarterback, you know, obviously it's a critical position for us. And like I said, Brad, every single thing is on the table. And I think we owe that to ourselves, our own quarterbacks, trades, free agency, draft. And we're working through that. And I do like the staff we've assembled to kind of attack that together. We've added some guys even in recent days, I think, that can help us as we evaluate that position. So we know the importance of it. We know that's a priority as we go into this offseason. That's stating the obvious. And I'm just excited about attacking it together. And then I guess I would say with Jalen and Khalil, neither of those required surgery. So it's just a matter of just, you know, strengthening and being ready to roll when we start back up.
Zach Pearson.
Hey, Ryan, kind of off of Brad's question there, as you evaluate your roster going into free agency, how close do you feel you guys are to contending again for the NFC North and potentially in the NFC as a whole?
Yeah, you know, there's a window here to improve our team. And I think, you know, it started with our coaches and kind of some of the tweaks we made there. And we look at this, you know, we have, you know, foundation pieces in place on our roster. And, you know, we've proven, you know, we have a playoff ready roster. We've been there two of the last 3 years, and we got a lot of young talent we need to develop. And obviously our expectations are much higher than that. That's obvious. But it's about building upon what we already have and making the necessary strides. And that's a big one that we're talking about right now. And I understand that, but we do feel like we have a lot of foundation pieces in place, a lot of good talent on our roster. And it's our job to add to that.
Pat Finley.
Hey, Ryan, who do you lean on to make sure that you balance the short-term benefits of a quarterback decision with the long-term impact it may have on the franchise in general? I think it would be human nature for you and Matt both to sit there and put a lot of weight in what a quarterback could do for you next year.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a good question, Ben. It's Matt and I, it's our coordinators, it's our directors in college scouting and pro scouting, it's Joey Lane, it's everyone, you know, it's Ted and George, it's a collaborative effort in this whole building. I know we use that word a lot, but it really is, you know, and I think it's natural for us. And, you know, talking to coaches that come into our building from maybe different teams, I think they appreciate and respect the collaborative effort that we take. So it's not just one or two people, it's an entire building making these decisions. And as you said, it's not just short term, there has to be a long term thought process in place. And that's the right way to do it. And that's the way we operate.
Stacy Dales.
Hey, thanks, Eric. Ryan, what do you consider specifically the strengths of your football team right now?
Hey, Stacy, how you doing?
Awesome.
I'd start with this. I think our strength is our coaching staff. I think we got a strong coaching staff that we built upon this offseason. But yeah, I mean, our defense is the strength of our team. You know, we have a lot of talent all throughout our defense. And are there areas we want to be better in that we were in last year? Of course. And I think we've done some things to already
try to tweak that. But and I think on offense, I think as the season went on, you saw some of our young talent emerging. I thought our offensive line really settled in the second half of the season, or our running game settled in. The talent we have at the receiver position, the talent we have at the tight end position with Cole and Jimmy. And again, it's on us to continue to add to it. You know, I go back to our special team, Stacey, and I think you look at the season Cairo had and CP and Pat O'Donnell, and I think our special teams is a strength too. So, but it's on us to add to that, continue to get better, and that's the window we're in right now.
Dan Wiederer.
Right, I have a second question, but I wanted to follow up on Adam's question about Allen. I know you're sensitive to the topic, but is there anything beyond numbers and the financials that has prevented this from progressing?
No, it's all, I mean, with the contract, there's a number of things that go into it. Again, I can't get into that, Dan. I hope you respect it. It's just part of the process, and it's just going to take both parties to work together to make something work. You know, I know Allen wants to be a Chicago Bear, and we want him to be a Chicago Bear, and it's a sensitive process that we're kind of in the middle of that, and we got to work through it.
Big picture, when you guys sat down for those meetings in those couple days after the playoff loss to kind of chart the future and express your vision, what was important for you to emphasize to George and Ted about how you were going to clear this hurdle, clear this hump, and have this football team playing championship football again?
Yeah, I think, you know, you try to take out the emotions right afterwards, Dan, and just kind of go through it. But I think you first got to understand the reasons why. Like, why are we in this position? And that takes some time. And it took some weeks after the season to meet with the staff and kind of our end of the year meetings and go through that. So it wasn't like everything is solved the day after the season. You know, we have to diagnose where the areas we want to improve and what's realistic. And I think we've done a good job of doing that. Now it's just using this offseason to attack that with the resources we have. And I think when you have continuity on the staff and you have a personnel department, a coaching staff that's been together for as long as we have, I've seen it in other organizations, that can be a strength. You know, we're united, we're on the same page, we see things the same way. And now it's just about attacking it together. And that's what we're doing. And we're excited about doing that in the coming months.
John Greenberg.
Mute. Hey, Ryan. Kind of going on what you said about what you guys don't know, what we don't know about what's going on in different buildings. How much are you guys clued in on, like, from social media to regular media, like when there's players that are unhappy and you start seeing like this avalanche of news coming in? How much do you guys kind of look at that and then maybe act upon it?
Yeah. Hey, John, I think there's a lot of that stuff that's going on, I think, now more than ever. You know, I think it gives you guys something to write about too, you know, and I understand that. But I think with us, I think that's when you lean on the relationships that you have in the league. Right now, you know, just me talking to GMs throughout the league, that's commonplace right now, regardless. And I think you lean on those relationships and you're able to quickly determine what's real and what's not, and different possibilities. And there'll be some things that might not even be in the media right now that are potential possibilities that we're talking about. And that's normal. That's normal every year. And I think that's where I lean on my relationships with my counterparts with other clubs. And I know Matt does the same thing.
Right. Like with the Khalil Mack situation, I assume it was something maybe you saw and then you kind of follow up on.
Yeah. And I think, you know, back then, I think you lean on, like, with Reggie McKenzie and John Gruden and that relationship and that communication. And, you know, it just progresses. And eventually something that might not seem realistic at the time becomes a reality.
Mark Grody.
Hey, Ryan, you've taken some big swings in the past on things, whether it was Khalil Mack or even, you know, moving up to take Mitchell Trubisky. Do you anticipate making a big swing on something in this offseason?
It just depends, Mark. It depends on the opportunity. You know, it's not like we go into it and say, hey, we're going to take a big swing just to make headlines and make a splash. It depends on what's presented to us, you know, and, you know, it could go a different number of different ways. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that we go into this draft, for example, there's a lot of evaluation that needs to take place. I mean, trading up might not be the best option. It could be staying put. It could be going back. And I think it just depends on the different targets that are there, the different options that are there. And what I appreciate is this is with Josh Lucas and Champ Kelly, Mark Sadowski, Jeff King, Joey Lane, leaning on those guys and the ability. And I think this offseason more than any, because of the number of players that are going to be available. We're going to see a lot of guys hit the market the coming weeks. And I really think as a staff, we got to be able to pivot and adjust along the way to some things that we might not expect. And I think that comes down to the the number of players that we've evaluated, and just being ready for every scenario. And there's a lot of hard work that's gone on behind the scenes to allow us to maneuver through a really unprecedented offseason.
So there is the meat and potatoes of what Ryan Pace had to say. We'll do the same for Matt Nagy a little bit later on. The headlines to me, Spiegs, I mean, one, this guy cannot win a press conference. It's impossible. There's nobody who would be able to win a press conference in his spot without a quarterback. So, like, I can hear Chicago collectively rolling its eyes when he yes. talks about collaboration and we'll just have to see and, like, not giving away anything as to what is to come, right? Like,
we want to keep our good players.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, that, he is left with platitudes because he has nothing else to point to. So there is no benefit of the doubt, but he has to speak, so he's screwed.
Yeah, that is the number one takeaway, without a doubt, is the frustration at the vagaries that he's gotten very efficient at. I don't want to say very good, because you know what they are, you can hear them coming, and then they are delivered. But he's gotten very efficient at using his 35 seconds of an answer to give you very little. You have to really listen hard and dig to get something, anything.
And a lot of football executives are like him. There are some exceptions. Chris Ballard, kind of ironically, given that he was here for so long,
it
is one of them. But you know how I feel like about judging press conferences. It doesn't matter. Like what matters is his record, win-loss record, ability to get a quarterback, ability to win. But saying something like we're not ruling out bringing Mitch back strikes me as totally unnecessary.
I agree. I completely agree.
Like, what chance would you put it at that Mitch Trubisky is a Bear next year? 1%?
Yeah. I mean,
come on.
Zero.
Right? It's zero.
It's so weird.
It should be zero.
I am frustrated and discouraged by the slowness of so many things. I'm frustrated and discouraged by the slowness of that clarity on Mitch. We know, everybody knows, you know, your head coach knows, Mitch knows, you know. So the tie severing or the release, or at least the acknowledgement of it, and the slowness of tagging Allen Robinson. There were 5 questions about it. The last 2 or 3 were about the personal side of it, because it's gotten so clearly awkward for a very beloved player and highly respected players. So I'm frustrated by all of that slowness. I don't know about you. I'm actually encouraged by the slowness, oddly, in terms of the quarterback. I'm slightly encouraged because they didn't move fast and close the deal on Carson Wentz when that could have been obvious and overpay. Because they are waiting and hoping that bigger names are coming available, be it Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson or Derek Carr or whatever. Like, and he talked a couple times about the size of the names in play. And I know it's your dream to get Deshaun specifically. And it is my belief that he is going to be dealt, Danny. So I really think that he is going to be dealt because of the massive dysfunction down there. So if you believe that and you know you screwed the pooch, wouldn't you wait as long as humanly possible and try to do everything you could to end up getting the prize of the offseason? And I feel like they're waiting on that, and I actually like that.
I have no problem with that. I love it. I'm just – every time I allow my head to go there, it's not like the Texans, say they do decide we're trading Deshaun Watson, they're not only going to call the Bears. They're going to call other teams.
I know.
And other teams are going to be interested, and those other teams can offer more than Ryan Pace. They just can.
But that's when you give up more. That's when...
there's only so much you are allowed to give up in the NFL.
We
can't trade a 20-30 first round pick.
We get our head over our skis assuming what will be offered. The Jets would probably look and say, all right, I'll give you Darnold and this pick, number 2, and one more. Something like that. And the Bears would come steamrolling over the top and give 3 picks and any 2 players, to quote your thought on Russell Wilson. Like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that the Texans will want open-ended assets and will get more in terms of the total of those from the Bears than they will from some of those other teams. Desperation.
I do because of how good he is. Like, I would love nothing more in sports than to be wrong. Literally. It would be my, other than like, oh, I could just make my team win the championship every year, it would be the number one thing, if I could wave a magic wand, it would be for Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. Mm. He is my favorite player in my favorite sport.
I think the stars are aligning for Ryan Pace, who loves to bid against himself, to give more than anybody's ever given for a quarterback that he could have had if he just went to freaking dinner. The stars are aligning. I'm hoping that's the case.
God, that would be absolutely incredible. There's a deadline on the franchise tag component of it, so they're not going to announce that until they absolutely have to. That's a part of the league calendar, and it would be frankly disrespectful to Allen Robinson to give him the franchise tag now as opposed to taking every possible moment to hopefully work out a contract extension. Like if Allen Robinson wants let's get into that part of it. What I think he actually did reveal there about Allen Robinson. Okay, we'll do that. John Hollinger at 4:35 on the future of the Bulls in the big picture. Matt Nagy still to come. But what I actually think Ryan Pace revealed about Allen Robinson next on The Score.